Hold on. I'll be right with you. I just have to get this thing here attached. Kind of rusty. Oh well. Boy, if ever there was a day I needed some WD-40, it's this one. I just don't carry it around. More fool me. You know, at some point, human beings are going to evolve. There. Where we can just squirt WD-40 out of a gland in our fingertip. That'll be convenient. Or really embarrassing at times if you don't intend to. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the diner. Welcome back. And I do mean welcome back. It hasn't been a while. But I am still, no surprise there, James Lilacs. The surprise, perhaps, is that I am sitting at my old accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern for Micah Connor, the old diner out on Highway 23, about 16, 17, 18. You know, it varies. You can get here quickly. You can take your time. I had to put my seat back on the stool pole. It's a rather inelegant term, I know, stool pole, but I don't know what else to call it. It's the thing that connects the stool to the ground. You got to have one of those, because until we invent some sort of anti-gravitational force we can deploy at will and cheaply enough to put them commercially in establishments such as this, you're going to have a pole that goes between the floor and the stool. A while ago, I asked the management here if they would be so kind, ever so kind, dash it all, to, keep this particular spot at the counter from being belonging to somebody else. Now, of course, anybody can sit here when I'm not here. And I don't own this place. I don't own this stool. I don't pay rent on it. At least I didn't. And so the idea that this is my spot somehow would seem to me to be a bit of a conceit. Could I have some coffee, diner blend, please? Because it's been a long day. Thanks. I mean, it's not my stool. But, you know, everybody has a favorite spot if you're a restaurant habitué or a regular, as we used to call them when I was in the restaurant business. I'm not a regular at any place anymore. The only place I'm at a regular at actually is my desk, where I have the same pathetic meal every single day. Except for today. I had sliders. That's what they were called. They were called sliders. And they weren't. I'm of the opinion that a hamburger has to be about 3 millimeters thick, square on the edges, topped with diced, flavorless onions, on a bun that seems to be made somehow of spun newspaper. And it has to taste like hot fried naga hide or something. That's a slider. And you have to be able to order up a box of nails on the side. Sliders and a box of nails. Then you feel like a real man, don't you? Now, you're not a man. You're somebody who's 21, poor, and drunk. And it's 2 a.m. And you should look really at how your life is going. But I had the sliders because once I saw them, I realized they were very thick. And their density and their well-cookedness made it very unlikely they'd slide anywhere. So it was more like one single hamburger that had undergone mitosis. I've given you every one of my tweets today. I'm not a regular anywhere. I used to be an irregular. I used to be a regular, not an irregular. But a variety of institutions around Dickeytown. In all of these places, I had my spot. When I worked at the Valley Restaurant, my spot was B7 because it was back far enough from the door that when people came in, the cold air didn't intrude on my artistic cogitations. But it gave me a commanding view of the entire restaurant. And when I went to the Dinky Dell Deli, as it was called, this great little deli at the end of a long brick hallway at the old College Inn, again in Dickeytown, my spot was by the door. There was also a poetical type fellow who later, I understand, went up the river for soliciting weeha from a miner who sat in the corner and sat there so often and so long that the impression of his fundament was permanently formed on the cushions. I had a little bit of a lighter print, I'm glad to say. But that was my spot, and that was the place from which I could see my world. And when I sat someplace else, it just felt wrong. If you're a regular, you got your spot. And if you're elsewhere, it just doesn't feel right. So I can't imagine coming back to the diner and sitting at a place that is not, quote, my spot, end quote. So a long time ago, I asked the help to talk to the management. I didn't want to talk to management directly. If I could somehow, what could we do? Well, we could have a mannequin of sorts that you could prop up in this spot. And I could pay for what he would order if he were me, or just put a sack of flour there, or maybe just somehow fix the stool so it wobbles a little bit so that people don't like to sit there. That one went real down. That one went down real well with management, as you can well imagine. You want us to fix a stool so that people don't use it, but you can come in and use it if you ever come in again. Yeah, something like that. So what we eventually decided to do was that I would lease this spot, and that's what I've done. Now, how do we keep people from sitting here? Well, that squeaking sound that you heard at the beginning was me putting back on the stool, which has been kept in storage for me low these many months. But I leased the space. I had to sign a lot of papers. There was a credit check, and I got a good, pretty good rate. Unfortunately, it's one of those APRs. And is that a lease or a mortgage? Must be a mortgage I signed then. It's got an APR. Yeah, because it goes up to something like 15% compounded daily after a while, unless I pay off the crushing balloon payment. But I'm going to refinance that long before that happens, or maybe even sell it. For all I know, this particular piece of real estate has appreciated quite nicely in my absence. Although there doesn't seem to be many people here tonight. Well, so anyway, they kept the seat behind the counter, and then when it was apparent I wasn't going to be in every day, they moved it to the back storeroom, I think that explains why when I bounce up and down, things fall out the bottom of it. Various pieces of food, what I take to be rat feces, and interesting little slips of paper, which, judging from the flesh-colored tones, appear to be somebody's personal stash of private little magazines that I shredded when I put the floor pole into the socket. Oh, dreadfully symbolic. Well, so here I am, and I'm back, and I don't get used to this, because as much as I would love to come here more often than I do, I don't come here often. If somebody was to walk up and try that line on me right now, I'd bust him in the chops out of just sheer homosexual panic, of course. Every guy understands that. But if an attractive woman sidled up and said, "You come here often?" I'd have to say no. And then there would be an awkward pause, and that would be the end of it. Then I'd remember, of course, that I was married and it was all right. And it's not like she was Veronica Lake or anything. So, happy Halloween. Never really used to. Oh, should I play a song? I should. I'm checking the jukebox here. Oh, and it's well stuffed. It's stoked bounteously with all sorts of Halloween goodness. I was never really that much of a Halloween guy. I was as a child, which I think is apt. I think the post-adolescent fascination with Halloween is a bit much. Really, I mean, I know people are expressing their inner self and letting their id just prance wild for a day, but I'm sorry, I have never been able to put together a costume that I thought did anything to bring out me or what I wanted to be. I mean, you go as Mahler one year and nobody really gets it. You know, you sit in the corner and talk loudly about converting to Catholicism, and I mean, it just doesn't do anything for people. They don't get the whole high forehead and the little spectacles, and even if you have a conductor's baton in your hand and you stab them with it periodically and then imperiously threaten somebody with dismissal from the Vienna Symphony because they mixed your cocktail wrong, it doesn't work. So I never really did it, but with the birth of my child many years ago, I started to get into the aspects of it that kids enjoy. The fun, the candy, the dressing up, the candy. The party is the candy. And there was a wide variety of entertainment that's themed towards children that I also enjoyed, most notably the roly-poly-oly Halloween specials with Spooky Ookie. My daughter and I still watch those every year. Though I'm beginning to think she does it more for my benefit than I do it for hers. There was even Pooh Halloween stuff, for heaven's sakes, although they were very gentle and mostly consisted of the possibility of the implication of a Snuffleupagus on the edge of the wood, which always, of course, turned out to be Eeyore dead drunk and sleeping it off in a ditch. So this year, it just seems particularly indistinct. I don't know why. It may be the weather. It may be the fact that my child isn't all that hot about it this year. It may be the general malaise, if I dare say the word, that is rolling across the land like a thick fog sometimes. There just doesn't seem to be a tremendous amount of Halloween brio about, as opposed to previous years. So to get myself into the mood, for no particular reason that I could think of, I mean, what if I'm not in the mood? Gosh, gee. I started watching all of the old Frankenstein movies and did something about this on that bleat thing that I do. But I didn't really have the time to write as much about it as I wished. And because the more I think about Frankenstein, the more I just don't buy it. Well, before I go on that, there has to be some Frankenstein tunes here in the jukebox, wouldn't you think? I mean, he is the guy. Some people say it's Dracula. And you'll see more Draculas than Frankensteins because he's easier to pull off. Little fake teeth and the, I want to suck your blood, and you got your basic drac here. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, here we are. F1.
Now you kids gather around, 'cause at this house there is something special going down.
You see, there's that same erroneous assumption. I've heard it so many times before that all of these guys, the witches, the mummy, the wolfman, Frankenstein, that they all have a social relationship. I don't think that's the case. What do they have in common? The witches have a pagan ideology. The mummy is Egyptian. You know, Frankenstein is made out of 19th century Carpathian body parts. What do these guys got in common? Nothing. Was a tune from Frank Throat and the Polyps, I believe. Yeah. Well, if it's the House of Frankenstein, and Frankenstein is the name of the creator, not the monster, that must mean that Mr. Frankenstein, Dad, if you will, has gone away and left young Frankie. How old was he? Young. I mean, he was... How old was Frankenstein, a couple of days after he was reanimated? Is he the aggregate age of all of his limbs and parts, or did you add them up together and average them? That's what I'd like to know. But I'm sure I just don't buy it. There are too many holes in the whole concept of getting all these body parts and stitching them together perfectly, of course, so that the blood goes everywhere and it doesn't shoot out and pool in some spots, that he was able to do all of these things and add the nerve endings as well to the billions of nerve endings. We know that McCoy could barely reattach Spock's brain with the help of that helper helmet that he wore on. The idea that Frankenstein himself, with the rudimentary medical skills of the era, could stitch together a human being just defies belief. But then, even if you buy that, there's the whole idea of him being reanimated by electricity. At some point, you would think that Frankenstein, the doctor, would have taken a freshly dead thing like a cat or a hamster or a budgie, and shocked it, just to see what happened. You've got this theory, I can bring them to life with, what, electricity. It's penny cheap. Not just any electricity, no, that special fresh kind that comes from the sky. All right, fine, take a sheep that just died, stake it out during a storm, attach lightning rods, let it get hit, and see if the sheep then stands up and says, bah. Maybe after 10 or 15 times of this not working for you, you would rethink the idea of electricity naturally bringing something back to life. And then, for example, you could try another experiment. You wouldn't actually have to do it. You could just consult the medical journals. You could look under, for example, electrocution, people killed because of. Electricity, number of people dead because of. Lightning strikes, comma, their effect on the human body, which is bad. And I mean, people who get hit by lightning die. They don't come back to super life. I mean, they don't all of a sudden shake it off and go, holy crow, I feel like $1 million. No, they die. So, maybe he was thinking the whole reverse psychology bit. I take something dead, is shock, and it comes back to life. That makes perfect sense, of course. If shocking the live stuff kills him, shocking the dead stuff automatically ought to bring him back to life. Yeah, that works out. Great, Victor. Nice work. Nice work. Really thought that one through, didn't you? But then, of course, every single subsequent Frankenstein piece is always about the indestructibility of the creature, which, as we later learn, had to do with his exposure to what? Cosmic rays, which apparently are much stronger at the top of the castle than they are downstairs in the basement where they're putting him together. Cosmic rays did it, yes. That's why he can't be killed. That's why nobody ever thinks to just chop him up and burn him and bury him and the rest of it. They just think, oh, well, he's dead now, not realizing he's come back to life 58 times before, because there's nothing like dead, rotten meat.
Happy Halloween!
Oh. Yeah, there's the breathy white people's chorus. Hi, guys. Reminding me that I shouldn't be so literal. Really. Next thing you know, I'll stop talking about how vampires actually have morphed from a primal fear myth into this sort of way of packaging sensitive emo men for young women who like the bad boy idea but don't like bad boys with beer breath and come to think that somebody as sensitive as a vampire who, after all, can't look at the sun, it's so tragic, would probably use Banaca or certs or something retsin-based, maybe a tic-tac, to cover up the ungodly, unholy smell of blood on his throat. I hate vampires. So what does that leave me with? It leaves me with a wolfman, I suppose. And the wolfman never did much for me either. A little too feral. A little too, not in the Will feral sense, feral, is it? I mean, obviously, he's a wolfman. But I like wolves. Wolves are interesting creatures. And they're pack animals, too. I mean, why didn't Wolfman try to hook up with anybody else? Did he ever run into any, like, four or five other wolf people running around the forest and, you know, say, you got a job open, you guys? You know, I'll take a mega position if you got it. Not looking for beta status. Just want somebody to hang out with. Somebody to howl with, as it were. What if we have any Wolfman-related tunes here in the jukebox? Let me take a look. Hold on.
Says his prayers at night, can change to a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the full moon shining bright.
So the Wolfman snores, is what you're telling me. Any more lyrics? Anything more to say about Wolfie? No? Yeah, well, doesn't qualify as a lyric. Good luck getting ASCAP royalties for that. He's got mange and ringworm and heartworm too, and he's going to die of some disease that could be prevented if he were domesticated. But no. Evil as can be. The curse, he will never be free. Like a dog, he pees on a tree. Biggest thing about Wolfman that is never really discussed is the fact that before he killed you, he'd probably sniff your butt.
Doc?
Dr. Weir's mystery will be continued shortly. Say, by the way, Doctor, is mystery your sole pleasure?
Young man, what could be more pleasant than mystery?
Well, music, for instance. That
music, why, of course. Have you ever heard my clanking of chains?
Doctor, I'm afraid you've got me wrong. I mean the kind of music men hum or whistle when they feel on top of the world. And gentlemen, one of the many things that give you that tip-top feeling is the pleasure of being well-dressed. Perfect taste is a criterion. And in hats, there's nothing smarter than an Atom. From stem to stern, your Atom hat gives off that look of quality. You see quality in the carefully molded shape, and in the richness of the genuine all-fur felt, and in the subtle color shade. Next time you pass an Atom hat store or authorized dealer, stop in and try on an Atom. Once you see and wear an Atom hat, you'll agree that today, as before, Atom is one of America's outstanding hat values. Now, the good Dr. Weir.
Vic Mizzy. You gotta respect the classics, don't you? The late and lamented Vic Mizzy, too. He died just a few weeks ago. And that chilling piece of music, of course, is from the movie that terrified me as a child, The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, the theme of. You can see how he uses the standard instrumentation for bone-like sounds, but also there's harpsichord in there. Because at some point, the harpsichord became the musical equivalent of the Victorian house when it came to Halloween iconography. Not exactly sure why this is. Could be that in those days they thought that a spirit who was playing a harpsichord was unfamiliar with the dynamic possibilities of the pianoforte, and hence would naturally choose an instrument which was more in line with what they expected. That is, there's not a particular sense of action on a harpsichord. It's a binary thing. It's on or off. The strings are plucked. They're not struck. So you don't, as I mentioned, have the dynamic range. And it just could be that the ability to appreciate nuances like that leaves you when you enter the spectral plane. Or it could just be that it was sort of creepy because it wasn't modern. And we know after a certain point that anything that isn't modern is wrong, right? That's the past, Dad. Same thing with Victorian architecture. And at some point in the future, every Victorian house will be gone from the planet. There won't be any of them left. And the dominant archetype for abandoned houses is the suburban rambler. But in the year 2175, you'll still be able to put a silhouette of a Victorian house against bare trees and a full moon, and people will say, oh, yeah, Halloween, haunted ghosts, of course. That's what that means. Even though once it was the height of modernity, the height of fashion, the height of style. Well, speaking of style, it's a bit of a tradition here at the diner that we always celebrate one of the most stylish examples of the Halloween arts, be it his incoherency, his deathless mutter of dismay, a stylish skill with a harpsichord. I speak, of course, of Lurch. And, of course, he has his own Halloween song. It's got to be here somewhere, doesn't it? It has to be. And there it is. T2.
We thought you might give us a chance and teach us how to do. Haunted House Update!
Oh, thanks for reminding me, guys. There is no Haunted House Update. You may recall in previous diners we went to the Haunted Diner. The Haunted Diner! It's obligatory to use an exaggerated Karloff accent when describing these things. We got there by going through a tunnel in the basement of the diner, which had been lost for years, of course, but we just somehow managed to stumble across it on Halloween. Well, the fire marshal, or one of the building inspectors or something, found it and insisted that it be bricked up. Something about all the zombies down there in the holding cells that might offer some sort of contamination. Since this is a restaurant that serves food, and you just don't always know whether or not somebody's going to go down there and deal with the zombies and then wash their hands afterwards. I mean, there's clearly a sign on the steps as you go up to enter the diner again. All employees who have handled zombies must wash their hands. But, you know, with the help you get today, you just can't always be sure. As for the Haunted Diner itself, well, here's the story. They say, you never know who they is. I guess they just stands for simplistic villagers who are waiting for night to fall so they can grab a torch and storm something. They say that some men went to condemn the Haunted Diner and were never heard from again. Which is understandable since they were from St. Paul, from the building inspector office, and they really had no cause to come back here once their work was done. They just put up that little orange condemn notice on the door and left. And the next day, the diner was gone. Did it go into the ectoplasmic realm? To the spiritual plane, borne aloft on cosmic rays? Or was it, as some say, demolished and then carted away with some of its fixtures sold off to an antique place and some other things sort of taken away by guys who knew what they were worth and sold on eBay? None know. But perhaps next year we'll... excuse me. Oh, hold on. Excuse me, buddy. Oh. Maybe my stool, but... good Lord, this is a big fellow. It's the thing with these stools here. You have somebody really big that sits next to you. You can't move over. It's not... You're kind of like being stuck with it. In an airplane. Oof. Oh, it smells, too. What? Try the Jubal. Jubal, it's the house drink. It's pretty good.
Good. Good.
Yeah, it is good. Well, you got a cigar? You want a light?
Good. Good. Good.
Careful there, pal. Don't inhale those things. Hey, if you're hungry, I got to warn you. I don't know what got into these guys, but there's tofu sliders on the menu. Okay, okay, all right, already. No, it's all right, Mac. Don't have to have the tofu sliders. They're not obligatory. Jeez. Well, I seem to have offended him. He's turned away. And he's, what has he got? He's pulling out of his pocket some AAA batteries. And he's chewing on them. Well, he seemed to perk him up a little bit for reasons I can't possibly imagine, but oh well, whatever works, I suppose. You know, I'd ask him about the batteries and the other things and his general incoherence, but. I'm just not the kind of guy to talk to the people at diners. I gotta tell you, I mean, frankly, you know, some weird 6'9", 6'10" guy sits down next to you with clumpy work shoes, and you know, a jacket that looks like it hasn't seen a cleaner's in about 40 years, and he's got growths on his neck. I'd look into, and he's got these scars, and he's green like he's gonna puke all over the place. I don't know. I don't want to strike up a conversation because if it goes no, I mean, maybe he has a story to tell. Who knows? Maybe he's got a very interesting story to tell. But frankly, I'd rather just talk to you guys. And that's what I've done, haven't I? Well, it all reminds me how much I've missed the diner. How much I've missed the long boomerang pattern for Micah Counter, the good depilatory strength coffee, the Crosley black and white television set bolted up in the corner, the nickel-plated rotary dial phone by the door. I've missed it all. I'll be back as often as possible, and that's a guarantee. That's not a promise, but that's a guarantee. Thanks for coming by, folks, and happy Halloween. I'm James Lilacs, and this has been The Diner for Friday, October 30th, 2009. We'll see you down the road.